Ryan and Gary, I think, to come and present, do the next presentation on asset management.
Do we have any votes for who my first victim will be?
Not to be outdone by my colleague. A little bit of Boardwalk Empire for any of you who know that.
So let's see here.
Do you want me to? I'll control the slides.
Yeah. So we often lose sight of the fact that our customers, in addition to all the fine applications that we provide, also make a lot of use out of the physical things that we provide to help them with teaching and learning. So Ghislaine asked Ryan and I a very interesting question a few months ago. She said, okay, in terms of all the stuff you have in classrooms and meeting rooms, you know, the audio-visual equipment and the PCs and the automation, she said, what's our investment there? And what are we going to need in the future on an annual basis to keep that investment alive? And what are the challenges that you have? So Ryan and I got our teams together, and we put together a couple of reports that I think were well done. I'd like to take this opportunity actually to acknowledge the fine work that was done in NCS by Louis Richet and Quan Nguyen's team. They did a lot of work in putting this together. So these are, I'm just here as the pretty face. All right, I'm just here as the pretty face. So first of all, to give you an overview of what we have, sort of the big picture, you're going to do it? Okay.
Yeah.
We have a fair amount of audio-visual equipment in the classrooms. We have 456 classrooms. That's a lot. And when you look at them, I think most of you know what active learning classrooms are. These are not the traditional kind of classrooms, but they're sort of a lot of audio-visual equipment designed so that students and their instructors can interact in a more free manner than sort of the talking head in front of the class. So we have 8 active learning classrooms with a huge investment in technology in them. We have 44 auditoriums, sort of like the big Leacocks and rooms of that size, and lecture halls, and 404 classroom seminar rooms.
Yeah, and so the next section is the PCs. So we, throughout this presentation, I'll use the generic term PC, but that includes, you know, desktop computers, whether they're, you know, PC or running Windows or Linux. It includes Macintosh computers, laptops. We'll just call them all PCs. We have about 10,000 personal computers on campus. About 1,500 of them are laptops, 8,500 are desktops. 60% of that entire fleet is managed by IT services. The rest, the other 40%, are managed within faculties, within areas that still maintain their own sort of independent IT technical teams. And then we have the data centers.
So you remember in the last presentation we did, one of the big pillars that we were responsible for in IT services is the data center. And you know, I thought it would be a good idea to give you some idea of the scope of operations there. So in the bigger picture, we run 6,000 square feet of data center space spread over 3 data centers. The equipment that we provide consumes about 300 kilowatts of power, which in turn means it generates about 300 kilowatts of heat, all of which has to be removed, and that translates into about a total of 1,400 cores of compute power. Now, what's interesting, Quan brought to my attention that in the data center there are 1,400 cores, a lot of computing power. If you look at what's on people's desktops, there's 20,000 cores. So look over the whole university. We provide a lot of stuff. I'm going to go through this really quickly because most of it is self-evident, but I just wanted to give you a deeper appreciation for how much we have and, you know, what our investment was and how long we expect things to live, which was used as the basis for calculating what our estimated evolution costs are. So evolution means, you know, when something gets old or something gets obsolete, that we have to replace it. It doesn't include growth, and we see steady growth on an annual basis. So one of the things that we provide is the overhead projectors, the audiovisual equipment in the classrooms. We have 450 of those. Total investment to date is $1.6 million. On average, they last about 7 years, and we figure it's going to cost us about $350,000 a year to just keep them going and keep them alive. Okay? I think most of you have seen, at least in the meeting rooms, if not in the classrooms, that we've automated most of the functions. So an instructor comes in, he sees one of these touch-sensitive panels in the podium, and if he wants to have the projector, show PowerPoint slides, and he also wants a document camera, and he wants the lights to be controlled, he just pushes a button. So we've deployed approximately 400 of these automation units. They're called Crestron units. Initial investment of about $1 million. We expect they'll live for about 10 years, and we'll have to invest about $240,000 a year to keep them going. These are the document cameras. People use them to project, using the projector, paper or Mylar slides. We have 100 of them. They're pretty expensive. They cost about $3,500 a piece, which makes for a total investment of about $350,000. We expect they'll last about 10 years, and we have to continue the investment of about $35,000 a year. And then people often forget, like in a room like this, you have microphones, you have speakers, they just don't get here automagically, so we provide these, and we have to also continue to invest in them to the tune of about $48,000 a year. So a summary of all of this audiovisual equipment. Next, please. If you look at the summary, you see where our current investment's about $3.25 million, and we're going to require about $673,000 a year to keep things going without growth. Do you want me to click for you?
Yeah, well, I'm good. So now we'll get into the personal computers. We have to take a slightly different approach with the personal computers. When we're talking about AV equipment, it's easier to sort of break things up into by type of equipment. Here we're sort of dividing things up by their use, because in the end they're all computers. So the first section is computers that we have in classrooms and teaching labs. So that includes podium PCs. The dedicated PCs that would be in a class for lecture recording, and also student use computers that we have in teaching labs. In total, there's about 1,400 on campus. The cost, the initial capital of that investment was anywhere from $1.3 to $1.4 million. Here, in the next few slides, I'll talk about current life cycle or how long these computers are staying in classrooms or staying in use. Versus what we're recommending as a life cycle. So currently, our computers in classrooms are staying in production before being replaced anywhere from 6 to 8 years. And it's really far longer than we would like to see. The recommended life cycle for most computers is about 4 years before needing to be replaced. And in fact, later in the presentation, I'll talk about some of the reasons why we're recommending 4 years. If we adopt a four-year replacement cycle, we'd be looking at anywhere from $325,000 to $350,000 a year just to continue to maintain those computers. Next, we'll talk about personal computers, public access computers that are not in classrooms. So these would be computers that would typically be in libraries, in corridors, or public computer labs that aren't used for teaching. And the reason we divide it up that way, it's based on the way that it's funded. Computers in classrooms are funded differently from a different source, different budget from public computers in libraries and so on. There we have about 1,600 computers for a total cost of anywhere from 1.5 to 1.6 million. We have that sort of spread there, just to sort of clarify. It's really because it's hard to tell, you know, first of all, some of these computers are very old, and the price of computers over time has been going down. Also, for many of these computers, many of them are not purchased centrally from within IT, so it's very difficult for us to know exactly how much was spent on these computers, or even exactly how many computers we have. That's why I say 1,600 approximately. That's our sort of best estimate based on the information that we have. There, too, they, from what we see, they're lasting anywhere from 6 to 8 years before being retired. We're recommending there, again, a 4-year retirement cycle. And the evolution cost there would be anywhere from $375,000 to $400,000 a year. Then we get into the academic laptops. All tenure track professors or tenure professors are entitled to a laptop. As you know, it's one thing that it was a program that was introduced several years ago by the provost to encourage computing, using the LMS in classrooms. And so all new professors get their first laptop fully subsidized by the university. And so that means that we now have approximately 1,200 laptops on campus with a total cost of anywhere from 1.6 to 1.7 million. The current life cycle there is anywhere from 4 to 5 years. So not as bad as the other two we were talking about. We are, however, still recommending a 4-year replacement cycle with a cost of $400,000 to $425,000 a year just to maintain the current fleet. Then we have our laptop loaning program. There are laptops that are loaned both by the libraries and by IT services. It's a relatively small fleet. There's about 250 loaners on campus. With an initial cost of $325,000 to $350,000. These tend to be kept in production longer. Part of the reason for that is that many of these laptops, or some of these laptops at least, are sort of recycled teaching or professor laptops. So when they upgrade their machines, the ones that do give them back to us, we end up putting them into the loan program, which does work to an extent. But oftentimes, these old laptops that we then put in the loan program have dead batteries, very low performance, have other issues. So it's not really the best approach. Evolution costs there would be $81,000 to $88,000 per year. And now we get into the biggest chunk of the fleet, the administrative computer program. This is for all non-academic staff, for all non-academic staff that require a computer in their job. We have about 5,800 of those computers on campus with a total investment of $5.6 to $5.8 million. We're really sort of pushing them to their limits as far as keeping them in production before retiring them, 6 to 8 years. And if we adopt a 4-year retirement cycle, like we want, the cost there would be $1.4 to $1.45 million a year. And now, this is the summary. So it's probably a bigger number than you were expecting. The capital cost of all the computers on campus is $10.85 million. It's 10,000 computers. And that would represent a $2.7 million annual investment required just to sort of maintain them, keep them current. And now on to data center.
So here's an overview of what we're doing in the data center area. There's one main data center in Burnside Hall in the basement, and a secondary data center at Ferrier, and a really small one at McDonald campus to handle some local applications there. The initial capital investment, this is not in the equipment, but this is just in the stuff that's required to provide power, heat, and cooling, and not the building, was about $2 million. And, that estimated life cycle is about 7 years, and we have to invest about $100,000 a year just to keep it going. Next. In terms of server equipment, currently we have about 250 Intel servers, which run Windows and Linux, and 25 Solaris servers, Spark servers. Initial capital investment of about $4.5 million, average life expectancy of about 5 years, and evolution costs of about $390,000 a year. In terms of storage, you know, we run multiple storage area networks and various other storage subsystems. A lot of rotating storage, 294 terabytes of storage manufactured by Hitachi Data Systems, HDS. We use Brocade SAN switches, and we've recently gone into something called HNAS, Network Attached Storage. Initial capital investment of $3 million, 5 year life expectancy, and evolution cost of about $580,000 a year. Backup facilities, this is iconic. These are the old tape systems that used to be used with IBM systems. I see Steve Wilmot going, oh, wow, look, they still have photos of that. They're as old as I am. Today we use tape robots, you know, these automated things that take small cartridges and put them in and out. Cost money, $1.2 million. We have two robots, or tape libraries as they're called, and the evolution costs are about $420,000 a year. Summary, an initial or total investment of about $10.7 million in the data center, and average evolution costs of about $1.5 million a year. Really, 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 really big picture, audiovisual, personal computers, data center, close to $25 million capital investment with a requirement of close to $5 million a year to evolve it without growth.
Well, now we'll sort of talk a bit about the why it's important to respect the life expectancy guidelines. A lot of these are more sort of computer-centric, but a lot of these will apply to all IT assets. First of all, when a piece of equipment, whether it's a computer or projector, sort of reaches its end of life, and we sort of try and stretch it beyond that, we start to see more unexpected failures. So, you know, as the equipment gets older, it's been in production for a long time, many hours of use, the chances of it sort of failing increase over time. Also, the older the equipment is, the more it costs to support, partly because of the unexpected failures and or the increase in failure, but also due to lack of spare parts, lack of drivers, various issues that just make older equipment much more expensive to support for our staff from a material and effort standpoint. Keeping our equipment current increases end user productivity. If we just think about computers for one, somebody that has the benefit of using a brand new, you know, 1 or 2 year old computer is going to be more productive in the work that they do on that computer than somebody that's using a 6 or 8 year old computer, especially with the growing demands of applications, central systems that need more and more local computing power. You may be able to do a lot of those functions on an older machine, but you'll be more, you know, those processes, those tasks will be much faster, much quicker on a newer piece of equipment. So I talked about this a little bit. So as there's new applications, new operating systems, new central systems that are coming out, their demand for high-performance computing at the desk level goes up each year. So if we have users that are using 6 or 8 year old computers, it becomes problematic. This one's maybe less of a concern, but still a concern. Users want to be able to use equipment at work that's at least on par with what they have at home. And so if they have a nice, you know, fast, recent computer at home, or laptop, or tablet, whatever, they want to be able to have that same kind of performance power or same level of performance when they get to work. Compatibility with OS security patches. Just to give you an example, in the PC world, you know, we're moving very strongly towards moving away from Windows XP, upgrading everyone on campus to Windows 7, because Windows XP is end of life. I think it's April 2014 will be the end of service life as far as Microsoft is concerned. That doesn't mean that the operating system will cease to work. It will, but it means that Microsoft will stop putting out patches, including security patches. So if we have, and because we have computers on campus that are, in some cases, you know, when I said the average is 6 to 8 years for some of these machines, that means that some of those machines are 10 plus years, and it's not that uncommon. We have machines on campus today that we cannot upgrade to Windows 7 just because they don't have the minimum requirements to be able to go to the next version of the OS. So we need to make sure that we're maintaining our equipment to be able to, you know, continue to take advantage of new operating systems and continue to get those patches. Energy efficiency is a big one for computers and all sorts of equipment. If we take the example of a 2012 PC, standard desktop computer, versus a 2006 model, the 2012 model is twice as energy efficient, takes half the amount of electricity to run, both in standby and when in full use, than the 2006 machine. And now we have some other life cycle issues. I'll talk about the hand-me-down effect. This is something that happens today where, because we're not keeping up with the demand, we're not replacing all the computers that should be replaced, we end up with a situation where we allot a certain number of machines or computers to a particular faculty or unit, and that number is less than the number of machines that should be retired. So what ends up happening is that we will, in some cases, or many cases, in fact, replace a machine that's, say, only 2 or 3 years old, so that, and then take that 2 or 3 year old machine and give it to somebody that has a 4 year old machine, and give that 4 year old machine to somebody that has a 6 year old machine, and it's, in some cases, this can happen 4 or 5 times in the entire sort of life cycle of a PC on campus before it finally gets retired when it's, you know, 8 or 9 years old. So that is very expensive from a support standpoint. That's a manual process, backing up that first machine, putting the new machine in place, wiping it, giving it to somebody else, backing up their data, putting it on the other machine. It's a very labor-intensive process. And we can talk. Gary can talk about this one.
So, you know, when you look at life cycles, there's a whole lot of stuff involved in life cycles, and you know, we were constantly being asked questions like, okay, I have a printer, just to take it away from the realm of PCs. The printer has a hard disk inside, and when I no longer need the printer, what should I do with it? You know, how can I recycle it responsibly? How can I make sure that the security issues are addressed? Because most printers today have hard disks, and hard disks contain copies of things like exams or transcripts of marks. Same thing with mobility devices. How many of you ever thought, oh, look, lost my phone? You know, what happens, you know, when you stop using your BlackBerry and you convert to an iPhone? Your BlackBerry has data on it. What happens when you have a PC or a server that needs its end of life? You just put it out in the garbage bin and hope it doesn't end up in landfill? Or do you sometimes wish that we would be more responsible about things like this? So there's a whole range of issues, you know, ranging from sustainability all the way up to security, that when we examine it, we understand needs to be managed for the entire life cycle, from cradle to grave, from purchase to recycling or reuse. We've been wrestling with the issue for a long time. I've been chairing a committee for the past, I think, 2.5 years, which finally came out with a report and a recommendation that was a consensus among a broad group of representatives in university faculties and service departments. The basis for the recommendation was that procurement services would be responsible for the life cycle management of all of the equipment, IT equipment that we acquire at McGill, and that, of course, there would have to be some responsibility on behalf of IT services to help with some of the more technical things. But we also realized, maybe for the first time that I can remember, McGill, you know, I've been here a long time, that there's a cost to doing things. You can't just say I'm going to have a policy and not have the funding to support it. So, for example, I think it costs something like about $50 to recycle an old tube display. Where does the money come from? You know, it doesn't appear from the air. So part of the recommendation that was recently accepted by VP Admin and Finance Michael DeGrappa was that every time anything at all is purchased that needs to have a life cycle management process associated with it, that there would be a percentage of the purchase price added to it at the time of purchase that would then be allowed to manage the process. I will be starting up probably, I think, next week, discussions on how to implement the policy, which is called the IT Equipment Disposal Policy. And if Ron Powers here, he'd be very proud of me for remembering what those initials stand for.
So the next couple of slides will be a little bit more PC-centric. I'll talk about some of the challenges with the existing provisioning programs or the way that those programs are budgeted. First of all, not all staff are covered. I give the example here in the administrative program, so these are the computers that are given to people like us. Right now it's based on 2,136 full-time positions. The base requirement to get a PC as part of this program is that you are a full-time employee. Now, we have many part-time and casual employees at McGill who also require PCs in the doing of their work. Those full-time positions are not included in the count. We have about 700 part-time and term positions that are not counted. So these people, in many cases, require a computer, and the only way for them to get a computer is through that hand-me-down effect. So they very often get a 2 or 3 or 4 year old machine that may not be suitable for their work. Second, we have limited oversight on university spending on IT assets. For computers, some equipment is bought centrally, some is bought locally. The rules around that are not always very clear, especially for machines that are bought locally by a faculty or unit, often because they're having to supplement, you know, a lack of, you know, if they're not being given enough machines centrally to keep up with demand, to keep up with all the positions that they have, to retire all the machines, the old machines that they have, they end up spending their own money, and then it becomes a question of who's responsible for supporting those machines. Some machines are paid half by IT and half by the faculty. So this is, when I talked to the previous point, you know, some entire computers are purchased by IT and some are purchased locally. We have examples of actual one machine that's half paid for by IT, and that same machine, the other half, is paid for by the faculty. So the ownership of that individual unit is really confusing. You know, who's responsible for that machine? Who owns it? Business needs are not being adequately assessed. If I take the example of the administrative program, the way it works today is faculties are allocated a certain number of basically machines, or we call them points. We give people points, but essentially there's a certain number of units based on their headcount. It's not necessarily based on the number of machines that they actually need. We have faculties and units on campus that due to whatever, you know, various reasons, either because they've funded a certain number of machines on their own or because they're a newer unit, have, if we look at their fleet, their fleet might be relatively new, and we might have another faculty that if we look at their fleet is relatively old. But when we allocate machines, it's based just on headcount. So what we're suggesting, and what we'll talk about it when we talk about some of our recommendations, is that we should be basing it on business need. You know, the unit that has lots of old machines should get more new computers than a unit that has a relatively new fleet. There's no centralized asset tracking or fleet management, and that's, again, one of the reasons why a lot of the numbers that I presented are estimates, because we really don't know exactly how many computers we have on campus, where they are, who's using them, how old they are. There's unclear ownership, support, and maintenance responsibilities, and uncontrolled fleet growth. So when we put a new computer in, we're not always taking an old computer out. So it's just, over time, the fleet is just growing and growing and growing. And I think I've alluded to this, we're not keeping up with fleet aging. So we can see here, this is a breakdown. This is all computers on campus. We can see by model year, the percentages represent the percent of the overall fleet that are in that model year. So in the red, these are all units that are past their retirement age, should be replaced, but they're still being used. We have machines going back to 2003. 2008 is sort of the midpoint or where, you know, they're about to be end of life. Green is they're still good. So as of right now, 27.3% of our entire fleet is end of life. We wait till next year, 42.8%. Almost half of our entire fleet should be considered end of life. So here we're going to just quickly, I'm not going to go through the numbers in detail, but this is the funding that's provided centrally to the three major PC programs at McGill. We have the funding for the administrative program, the academic program, those are the academic laptops, and TLSWG, this is the funding for computers in classrooms. Our current average spend over the last 3 years by IT is $800,000 a year. We should be spending closer to $2.4 million as a university. Now, just to be clear here, as a university, we spend a lot more than $800,000 a year. That the gap between $800,000 and $2.4 million, some of that is made up for by faculties that are supplementing using their own budgets to purchase computers. We don't know what that exact amount is. But as a university, we should be spending $2.4 million a year. Did you want to take this one? These are some of the changes that we're proposing to the funding models.
So one of the things that Ghislaine has mentioned several times in the past two meetings of this type has been the IT steering committee. And thank goodness it's her job to convince them to do something about our funding. So Ryan and I have presented to you what we think we require in order just to keep going and maintain a level of excellence at McGill, or actually to increase our fleets to be excellent. But, you know, in convincing the senior people who make these decisions that we actually need this money, we also have to demonstrate that, you know, we're just not doing things the same way we've always done them and we're being inefficient. So part of the challenge is to also convince powers to be that we're behaving in a more responsible and we're operating more smartly. So we have done several things. I think maybe these slides are maybe a little bit out of sequence, okay? Another, I don't know that if you want to talk, that's
sure.
Really yours,
yeah,
okay?
No problem. So we need to make sure that when we're purchasing machines or purchasing any IT equipment, that there's a provision for the maintenance cost, the retirement cost, the cost to sort of take that machine out of production, to recycle it, but also the you know have set aside money to say, okay, if we've made a new classroom, put in 40 computers into that classroom, we know 4 years down the road that we're going to have to replace those machines. That's not happening today. The initial investment is being made, the budget's being made to create that new classroom, but there's nothing that's being set aside down the road to retire or replace those machines. So that needs to sort of be built in. There needs to be a mechanism to build that into the yearly budgets. We need to clarify ownership and support responsibilities. It's a big problem, especially in our domain when it comes to personal computers. It's not always clear which machines IT is responsible for supporting and which machines the faculty or unit is responsible for supporting. You want to add something?
Yeah, I have a brief comment on that one. When we were looking at the equipment disposal policy, it's not only about disposal. You know, we also looked at what Ryan is talking about. Where is equipment today and who does it belong to? Mm-hmm. And very often you hear in the faculties, well, you know, I have an old computer and really can't use it here at McGill anymore, so I took it home and I gave it to my daughter to do her homework on. Those computers are still on the books. So one of the things that we said in the policy, which is now sanctioned, as I said, is that any computers or any equipment, really, that's bought with university money belongs to the university. It doesn't belong to a faculty, and it doesn't belong to an individual. Now, we've heard stories of faculties and units who've had, let's say, 20 PCs that they deem to be, end of life, and they've taken them and given them to their local school. And this is inappropriate. You know, like if we want to be efficient, we want to make the best use of our equipment, at least we should offer them to the entire McGill community since they belong to McGill.
We need to centralize asset management standards and practices for all IT assets. I think this is probably less of an issue for audiovisual and server equipment because that equipment is really, you know, the ownership and support responsibilities of those things and tracking of those pieces of equipment is relatively clear because most of it is NCS. When it comes to the PCs, regardless of whether IT has purchased it or whether the faculty has purchased it, there should be some sort of centralized oversight and processes in place to identify those as McGill assets and track them, track where they are, who's using them, what their life cycle is. And there should be standards that apply across the board for managing those PCs. What level of patching is on them, the level of hardening, how they're supported, how they're managed, regardless of whether it's happening, whether IT is performing that function or whether Med-IT or engineering is performing that function, there should be some centralized sort of governance over how all computers at McGill are managed and supported. We talked about this already, centralized oversight for all IT spend, regardless of where it's coming from. And so we spent the last few slides talking about what we have today and what it costs to maintain. That's the status quo. You know, what we also are looking at is ways to sort of lessen the burden or get more bang for our buck by reducing the overall demand for this type of equipment and seeing if we can optimize. So we formed this in a bit of a Q&A format. Do we need as many computers in our labs and classrooms when 95% of all students own a laptop? Why do we need to have so many public access computers? So one of the big issues that we face today and one of the big drivers for why we need so many public access computers is the use of sometimes very costly licensed software that is owned by McGill that we don't have the right to allow students to install on their own personal, on their own private machines, but they need it to be able to do a certain lab or certain class. So we're looking today at ways to virtualize access to these applications so that a student from their own equipment, from their own laptop, can access the application, use the application installed on our infrastructure, on our servers, without actually installing it on their own local equipment. Now, obviously, this will vary our ability to do this. There's a technology component to that, but that's the least of the, it's not the biggest part of the concern. The bigger issue is the licensing models of each particular piece of software. Some software vendors do allow application virtualization, some don't. So we're currently doing an inventory of all those applications and trying to get a better understanding of what those sort of caveats are. But in a sense, this is something that we'd like to, an approach we'd like to take to help us reduce the number of machines that we have in public areas. Where McGill still needs to provide a physical machine, could we use thin clients to replace fully functional computers? Does everyone know what a thin client is? A thin client is basically a small sort of device that sort of looks and feels like a computer. You have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse, but all of the processing power and software is housed and running on a central system. So the actual cost of those individual units is very, well, much less expensive than a full-blown PC. So the answer is yes, but. Thin clients are less expensive per unit, as I said, but require significant investment on the infrastructure side for it to work. So what we save at the desktop may, that's a big sort of question, may get eaten up at the on the infrastructure end. That said, however, even though that might be a wash, there is a real advantage on the support and maintenance side. It's, you know, when you're able to support and maintain thin clients completely remotely, having a standard image that gets pushed to hundreds, if not thousands, of desktops, it's much easier to support than fully functional PCs. And the last one was about physical servers and virtualization.
So the original model for client-server computing was that if you had an application, you bought a server, you attached the server to some storage, usually directly attached to the server, and then you had a bunch of people who were accessing that application. The result was a certain amount of inefficiency because every time you had a new application, you needed to buy a new server. And when you look at the utilization rate of, say, CPU on individual servers, you would see maybe, you know, they had this much capacity, but most of the time they were running with this much resources. So, you know, somehow you'd like to take advantage of all the rest of the resources that are available. The other part of the inefficiency was that as the number of applications multiplied, the number of physical servers multiplied. And every time you have a new physical server, there's a bunch of management tasks associated with it. For example, patching operating systems, security updates, that kind of thing. So quite a while ago, the concept of server virtualization was invented. And now it's come to the point where it really is almost a commodity entity. And most organizations will virtualize their server so that they can take advantage of all of that capacity and also have tools available to them which allow them to much more easily manage these servers. As an illustration of what we've been doing in this respect, here's a graph of the statistics that we have available. We actually started virtualizing, interestingly, with the advent of Banner on the Solaris machines, because those machines really were virtual or lent themselves to virtualization. But in terms of sort of like the run-of-the-mill Intel machines, we have statistics going back to 2009, and you can see that the steady growth to the point where we have close to 500 machines that are virtualized today on many fewer virtualized machines. These are called VMs or virtual machines. So we've virtualized servers, and we've also virtualized storage. And Ryan's talking about virtualizing the desktop. Yeah. So I think we're really making good progress.
And what I forgot to mention in the previous slide is that for both of those two concepts, thin client and application virtualization, we currently have projects underway to sort of look at those caveats, really understand the technology. And in fact, we're working on a pilot as we speak. Some of that technology, some of the virtualization technology is already in place. And we're going to be testing some of that coming up very, very soon.
And one final word. You know, we talked last time about breaking down silos, and this is an example of a great project that's been doing that because, you know, Ryan's team and the NCS team are providing all of the virtualization software in the background and cooperating on a daily basis with the team and Ryan who are focusing on the desktop. So we're not putting up this line that separates the desktop from the infrastructure that's in Burnside Hall. And I think that coalition, if such a word exists, has been really good for both teams.
Before we go to the sort of final slide, did anyone have any questions or comments? No? There's only one slide left. Sort of a pro-life tip. It's always preferable to wear a bib to a lunch meeting. And that's it for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.